When I was a kid, I collected comic books, which probably isn't a surprise considering that I'm a grown man sitting in his basement recording a podcast that no one listens to. But I collected comic books. And to get kids to buy comic books, the publishers made a big deal on quote-unquote milestone issues. So like an issue 50 of Superman or an issue 75 of Wolverine. That's the one where his adamantium got ripped out by Magneto. Yeah, I remember that. Well, this is episode 75 of Sourcecast. And we're not making a big deal about it. When you've done things for a while, it's good to step back and reflect. And if you're not in a reflective mood, at least follow up on some tasks that you may have left behind. But we're going to follow up on a couple of things that we've brought up on the podcast. So I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast episode 75. Before we get to our main story, let's review the acquisitions that have taken place over the last week. IBM has acquired a company, XCC Digital Work Hub, to strengthen their IBM Connections platform. The former XCC is a digital workplace hub that IBM officials said will create a single destination personalized homepage for employees. XCC's hub will be renamed IBM Connections Engagement Center and will live under the portfolio of IBM Connections. I'm saying Connections a lot. It's getting on my nerves. This connection suite competes with Microsoft Slack and Atlassian. Since we're reminiscing, just a reminder that Micro Focus, the company that HPE is spin merging their software to, that asset acquisition has formally been approved by Micro Focus investors. As a reminder, that is an $8.8 billion deal. Interesting note, that investors meeting, which was held in St. Paul's in London, was only attended by one shareholder. NTT Data announced a strategic investment in NoSQL database provider MarkLogic. NTT is a company that I've been keeping my eyes on. I'm interested in what they're doing in Japan. It's intriguing that a Japanese telecom company is making an investment in a database product. The sweet spot for MarkLogic is apparently integrating data from various data silos, which is a problem for a variety of large enterprises as they look to get the most out of their data. And speaking of Japanese companies, as you recall, Toshiba made a series of bad financial investments that is bringing the company down. They are seriously on the brink of bankruptcy. The problem is Japan does not want Toshiba to sell their chipset company to a Chinese company and are desperately working with foreign investors in the U.S. to see if they can salvage a deal to keep memory chip manufacturing in Japan. Apparently, Western Digital at some point agreed to purchase the chipset company, but now Toshiba is saying that the NAND flash memory chips, which is the most valuable thing in this entire transaction, well, that's apparently not on the table for the acquisition from Western Digital. Toshiba's doing some funky move where they are transferring the memory chip assets to a different joint venture so it's not part of the sales group. This sounds a little shady, and I definitely think the pressure from the Japanese government has something to do with it. And one last thing before we get to our main story, I want to do a follow-up to last week's podcast, episode 74, Remote Work. There's a topic that I wanted to bring up, but the podcast got a little too long. So as we mentioned last week, IBM's doing away with remote work as much as possible. There are pros and cons to that. In my opinion, employers should focus on flexibility and be less concerned about physical deployment. Listen to the podcast if you're interested. But there is another aspect to remote work that I wanted to bring up. When you're reading about millennials and workforce trends, there's a lot of information that's saying younger people are moving to cities. But there's also a lot of information that states that cities have never been more expensive to live in, and it's much harder to have a good standard of living within a city. It's pushing people away. And then add to that, your millennial workers who are 24, 25, and 26 right now, in a few years, these people who are living in the cities, that companies are changing their strategic locations to urban areas to accommodate. In a couple of years, when they're 29, 30, and 31, who now have 5 or 6 years of really good work experience and are seasoned and don't need to be managed as much, as they're coming into their own, starting personal lives, having children, are they going to stay in those cities that the companies are migrating to? I'm not going to take a guess, but I know for myself, when I started thinking about having children, we moved to the suburbs. I have a personal hypothesis that I was discussing with a friend yesterday. This work from home trend, I actually think it's going to grow. And I think you're going to see millennials who are heavily in college debt, do not have a lot of financial assets, as they're leaving the cities to start families. They may not even go to a suburb that's surrounding the local city that the company is based in. I think you're going to see young families move to destitute states or destitute towns that you could pick up a great house for a song. And if they could figure out a schooling situation for their children, and obviously if it's not a safety issue, you're going to see young people take over small towns in Americana in the Midwest, build communities there, and they're infusing their coastal salaries into these small local economies, which they can shape politically and financially. I think that's the future. And I think you're going to see a situation that, because it's so cheap to live in these little towns, even if the employee has to go back to the mother office for a week out of the month, and they have to pay out of their own pocket, it's still going to be financially viable for them to be able to do that. I'm not saying I'm right, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. So on to our main story. I talked about following up on an older thread that we haven't talked about on this podcast for a while, and that older thread is Hewlett-Packard. For those of you that may not remember, at the end of 2014, Hewlett-Packard announced a split. They became two companies, Hewlett-Packard Inc. and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Hewlett-Packard Inc. was basically desktop computers and printers, and then they took a couple of their toxic assets like autonomy and shoved it in there. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise was their consulting, software, hardware storage, and server business. In the subsequent 2 years, Hewlett-Packard Inc. sold off all the autonomy assets to OpenText. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise also sold off a couple of software assets to OpenText, but then took the rest of their software assets, and as I said in the acquisition section, they're selling off all of their software assets to Micro Focus, which will happen at the end of the summer. A few months ago, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise also completed a deal where they spun merged their consulting business with CSC, and now that company is called DXC Inc. At the start of the split, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise was the clear favored company. Everyone thought that they were going to succeed. They were going to crush poor HP Inc. How was poor HP Inc. going to survive? I spent probably a dozen of the first podcast episodes hypothesizing EMC and HP Inc. merging. Well, that didn't happen. Surprisingly, HP Inc. has done relatively well. HP Inc. is now the number one desktop manufacturing company as far as sales. They're beating Lenovo. Lenovo was now second. And Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, I've made several comments and jokes and pleas for understanding. Since they sold off their software business, and since they sold off their consulting business, there's really not much left of HP Enterprise. And I'm not the only one saying it. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise had a 13% plunge in revenue compared to the same quarter last year. Consumers are confused. If I was a customer that purchased a bunch of products from HP a few years ago, I wouldn't know what was going on right now. Every time you blink, they're selling off some other asset, and that's something a corporate buyer has to mitigate and manage, and I can't imagine that it's been smooth. I wouldn't be reassured as a customer right now. And when you read comments from Meg Whitman, after they've gone through this whole cycle of reducing and selling off all of these assets, she's talking about buying again, which makes me wonder, what are they going to buy? In the last 4 years, Hewlett-Packard has shed 100,000 employees, and they're repositioning themselves in a commodity-based market of hardware. Even if they are the number one provider, and even if they are showing growth in those hardware areas, there's no major profit margins for that. They're going to have to compete with Dell, Infinidat, IBM. And then under that layer, there's a whole network of resellers for that type of equipment that make the margins razor thin. Let's go back to HP Inc. While HP Inc. has beat Lenovo, which is extremely commendable, good job, HP Inc. I'm really rooting for you. Like HP Enterprise in the storage market, they're in a commodity business. They've been offering a series of premium machines and laptops, but it doesn't seem like consumers are buying those. Like Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, HP Inc. plans to reduce its cost by making significant job cuts in order to show bottom-line growth, according to Seeking Alpha. But these measures are not long-term strategy, and if the category segments continue to decrease, which they are for everybody unless you're Apple, and even Apple's hurting, they need to figure something else out. They need to do something new. So we haven't talked about HP for a while and its various sub-companies and spin merges, but I've been watching them, and I'm still trying to understand their long-term strategy. I've been impressed with the scrappiness of HP Inc., and I've been immensely confused by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. I'm very curious to see how that story pans out in the coming months.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. Outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.